Welcome back to the Wavy Podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, as well as the managing editor of the soundtrack.ca. Today, I have with me Jameson, aka Teen Days, actually one of my favorite artists. I've been listening for, I think a bit over 5 years now.
Wow, wild.
Yeah. So really cool to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. That's really, that's great to hear.
It's kind of a funny story. So I don't even remember how I discovered you. It might've just been on like Spotify when it just like recommends songs. I don't know. Long time ago though. And it's funny because most of my favorite artists, I do look into them and like find out who they are and, you know, their background and stuff. But with you, I kind of never did. And then you did an Instagram live stream.
Yeah. That's right.
And then I was like, oh, like I've never seen him go live before. This is so rare. And I was so excited. And then I was watching and then I was like, oh shit. Like he's Canadian. He's literally from BC. What? I thought this was like an LA dude. Like what? Like it.
So I'll take an LA, LA persona. That works for me.
It was just cool to find out you were a lot more local than I had thought. And, you know, I'd seen your name in town at some shows like over the past few years, unfortunately. Never made it out, always wanted to, but it was just so cool to find that out. And so that's kind of how I
That's really interesting that you would happen to have kind of discovered all of that based off that Instagram live, because you're right. I like really, if I'm doing something that's a live stream, I'm usually trying to like maybe DJ or I did like a kind of live ambient set a couple of weeks ago, but I don't know what came over me, but there's been a couple of, usually it's on Saturday evenings where I will just like open it and chat with people and sort of take questions or whatever. And it, you know, I'm not sitting here with like a million followers or something like that. It's a pretty sort of like small dedicated group of people, but the conversations have always been really interesting and stimulating, and people ask really, interesting questions of me and sort of my creative process and stuff. So I think right from the start, I always was very hesitant about sort of giving away too much of myself. But, you know, I guess I've been doing it long enough now that there's some of that, some of those barriers are sort of coming down. But yeah, that's really cool that was sort of the thing that led to this.
Yeah. It all fell into place. Could you give a bit of an introduction to the listeners about who you are and the kind of music you make?
Sure. Yeah. Like you said, my name is Jameson Isaac, and I live in a town about an hour and a half outside of Vancouver, kind of the last city before you hit the mountains. I've been doing this project Teen Days since I put out my first release in July of 2010. So It's been just kind of over a decade. I sort of started out making very bedroom, lo-fi sort of synth pop, chill sort of music. And I was always really inspired by those artists that kept reinventing themselves. And while I've never really done something that's like as drastic as like, you know, a David Bowie or Bob Dylan or, I was always being inspired by that. I never really wanted to try and repeat myself. So I've put out something like 6 or 7 full lengths over the last decade, and I'm trying to just change things with every release. And so what started as a lo-fi bedroom sort of thing has shifted to, there's some records are more dance floor oriented. I put out a record in 2015 that is, with a lot more live instrumentation, sort of indie pop sounding. My last sort of proper full length was kind of my attempt at more like hi-fi, almost like neoclassical ambient piano music, sort of blended with a lot of more traditional house music sounds. And so, yeah, I like to say that I don't make very offensive music. I tend to make music that you could probably play for your grandparents and it would go over somewhat smoothly, but Yeah, I've always tried to do something that's really pleasant for the ears and easy for people to listen to.
Yeah, no, definitely very PG, but just stunning and beautiful. And well, yeah, the first record I got into yours of was Glacier. And oh, yeah. I would listen to it a lot in my first year of university, just like studying or hanging out with friends, going on walks to like clear my head. I live near like a big arboretum forest kind of thing. Wow. And it's just, yeah, so many of your songs, I just have these memories of that tied to it. And yeah, it's great. I love your music. But I was
thanks so much. That's, wondering, that's cool.
Yeah, I was wondering what inspires you to make such atmospheric music. It seems mostly inspired, not mostly, but a good chunk of it inspired by places and nature.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it does come down to the fact that I live in the Fraser Valley here in British Columbia. The landscape is so much a part of my daily life. Whether that's going out for hikes, just this morning we tried to go for this hike and the path was just completely iced over and I was nervous I was gonna fall and break a hip or something, I don't know. But yeah, even in winter, you know, we're doing whatever we can to try and be outside as much as possible. And then in summer, of course, there's so many lakes here and the ocean is so close by to us too. I've always just felt that has been such a inspiration, really, and this creative well of which I can draw from. So I think and when it comes to the idea of making atmospheric music too, I've always just been drawn to that type of music, to the types of songs on records that indulged in that a little bit more. And yeah, I don't know. I have been thinking a lot of, for some reason lately, about the time of life where I was into more like emo and sort of hardcore and post-hardcore music, which was when I was that age in university. And I was always really drawn to, like, there would be these interludes that were way more ambient or sort of post-rocky or something like that. For whatever reason, that just always caught my ear. And right. So I remember, yeah, when I first started really experimenting with electronic music, while I was into a lot of dance music and IDM and, you know, Aphex Twin and
nice
stuff that's definitely not necessarily, I mean, you know, there can be a lot of atmospheric music sounds in a lot of that music, but I was, when I found myself drawn to that sort of music, and it was always just, I just leaned in towards that direction where I wanted to like create a vibe. I don't know. Maybe that's like a sort of crass way to, or a vague way of describing it, but I always wanted to make music that the instrumentation itself, the arrangements were the thing that created this atmosphere, this feeling for people.
Right. Cool. Yeah, it's really refreshing to hear most of your music about these things. As myself, I more and more over the years am inspired by nature, and that's how like I clear my head a lot of the time, and you know, just deal with things. I go for walks. I go for really long walks. So it's so refreshing to see music tied to that and inspired to that, especially where, you know, most mainstream music, a lot of it is about relationships and sex and money and all this stuff. Right. And, you know, there's certainly a place for that, but it's just refreshing to see something different.
I think just to sort of, to follow up on that too, I think it's, there's something about the fact too, that I've never really lived in a very big city. Like, never lived in Vancouver. I lived in the prairies for a little bit and
nice.
Lived in these small towns. And so the appeal of all of those things that get so represented in sort of mainstream culture and pop music and everything, I just never really connected with them, to be honest. And like you said, like there's a time and a place for pop music and music that deals with all of those subjects, and I've dealt with them in my own sort of way, but mm-hmm. I've always just lived a very kind of slow, peaceful life, and so it feels like a very natural extension to dip into that kind of music.
That's awesome. I love that. So cool. What would you say your creative process is like? You know, you've put out a series of different EPs, I guess, over the past year. I'm wondering like how long it usually takes to make them, and they're all beautiful. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, not very long. I think when I have a specific project in mind that I know is going to be like a full length record or is going to be more of a focus or sort of a statement, then I get very, very critical and very into the editing phase and the sequencing of the tracks on the record and all of that sort of stuff. And then there are these phases of, where the creative burst will happen and I'll make a ton of music in a relatively short amount of time. I can't pin it down to a certain point of the last, you know, it's probably been about 20 or so years that I've kind of been working with electronic music and songwriting and that sort of stuff. And somewhere along the line, I just got, I got really good at finishing a song and being able to say, okay, that's done. I'm moving on to the next thing. And it's something that I know is really difficult for a lot of artists, and that idea of sort of finishing it and being able to say like, I can't add anything to this. I can't take anything away. It just is what it is. And so those EPs last year, for whatever reason, I was able to just, you know, give myself this goal of like, okay, I want to release a couple EPs. I don't know how many it's going to be, but, you know, each one's going to be about four tracks. And so every time I would, you know, finish five or six tracks, I would say like, okay, I'm going to pick four out of those six and then, you know, bounce them, put them away in a folder, onto the next one. And so, yeah, all of that music was made between March and maybe May or June.
Wow.
Yeah, it, like I said, happened really fast and in a really kind of surprising way. I didn't expect it to happen with that kind of speed, but it's pretty cool to take a step back and I don't know, see this relatively small body of work come at such a quick pace.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, for someone like myself, it's nice to have something consistently out, especially in these times, these boring times.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I was just listening to a podcast today where they were talking about how the hosts were saying, we love doing this podcast because you can't even think about that idea of, well, I'm releasing it, but you know, what do people think about it? You know, you don't have that time to reflect. It's just like episode. You're moving on to the next thing super quickly. And there's something about that that I also, I don't know, I feel like it tapped into something like that as well. Because again, when you're putting out a full length record, it's like a lot of time and effort and thought put into these, you know, a ton of different details and money too. You're sinking all of this money into this statement that you're doing. And my whole intention with all those EPs last year was like, I just want to almost busy myself, if I'm being perfectly honest, because the start of the pandemic was really stressful and I was super anxious. And so I kind of just went to the thing that I know I can get comfort from, which was sitting in the studio making records. So yeah, it's I don't know. It's a crazy project to look back on now. I still kind of can't believe that it exists.
Totally. Yeah. Well, I'm glad, you know, you can find comfort in that. I feel like over the past few years, EPs in general are getting a little bit more popular, like with bigger artists that you would see normally putting out like full length albums. They're doing like EPs. I don't know if you've noticed that trend at all, but it's interesting.
I think a part of it is must be tied into the platform as well, right? Because people are consuming music in such a different way than we were even 5 or 6 years ago, right? I would imagine that, you know, it's a combination of like people's attention spans are maybe a little bit shorter. Maybe people are consuming so much music just through playlists and the way that the streaming platforms are sort of feeding you music, the idea of doing this big, you know, maybe 12 or 13 track record, I don't know, maybe it's a little antiquated. At the end of the day, that's like the world that I grew up in is like the classic album is a thing that I have a tough time shaking. So while I still like doing these short bursts of EPs, I'm still drawn to I want to make a 40 minute record and have it be this body of work that is intended to be listened to all the way through. It's one of those things where I've just come up with that being the standard, and it can be difficult to shake that.
Yeah. No, now that you mention it, I think it totally has to do with attention spans, because, you know, you think of these albums and so many songs just don't get heard because people are not listening to albums like they once were. But versus if you put out an EP with 3 or 4 tracks, people look at that. Oh, that's only 20 minutes. Quick.
Yeah,
I'll listen to every song. So that's true. It makes a lot of sense.
I should be in marketing for these. I should be working for a major label or something. I've got the ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. Next project. So you were kind of mentioning, you know, how you take inspiration from electronic music, but then more ambience. I'm wondering what draws you to make something more upbeat, like for instance, Bioluminescence, as opposed to something like Breathing Tides.
Yeah, that's a good question. I find myself going through these phases or seasons where I can tell just based off the type of music that I'm listening to on like a daily basis. Or sometimes it can depend on sort of what the year of touring looks like. So for example, with Bioluminescence, I kind of had in mind okay, I know I'm going to go out and do whatever it would be, a 2 or 3 week tour. And I was thinking to myself, what do I want that live experience to look like? And that wasn't even necessarily the main focus of why I made the record that I did. I remember thinking to myself, I don't want to go out with a band. I would prefer to just go by myself or perform by myself. And so how can I make music that will be able to be performed just by myself and have it still be engaging and fun? And so it leaned towards more of this sort of kick drums, not necessarily dance music, but somewhere in that sort of in between of ambient and house music.
Right.
And then there are other times where I'm just fully, into a certain genre of music, or I've just been finding myself listening to a ton of different records that all sort of have a similar vibe. And part of it is there's this, I like experimenting with what would it be like if I tried to make those types of sounds or make a psych record or something like that. And so then the record sort of starts to take that kind of turn. But yeah, it's funny, at the end of the day, it's a tough thing to describe, right? The way that the ideas or sort of the things that I'm being influenced by externally all kind of get synthesized through the music. And so I don't know. I wish there was a more sort of concise answer, but I think the lyrical content for the records that I've put out that have lyrics in them, those are usually very determined by what's been going on in my life. At a relational level or just sort of externally. I'm working on some music right now that is very much a synthesis of what the last year has been like. So where those Reality Refresh EPs that I put out last year were, you're not hearing the sort of anxiety or the tension that I was feeling going through quarantine. But this music that I'm making now has lots of lyrics, and I'm talking about, what it feels like to kind of be stuck inside for a year. There's, musically, again, it just is sort of I'm going to experiment with some sounds and kind of see what clicks with these types of lyrics. And so it can be a toss up, it really is just sort of seems to be maybe not necessarily at random, but just whatever it is that's whether it's the music or what's happening externally in my life, that's making its way through the music. Right.
That makes sense. Cool. So then you're working on an album.
Yeah, so I have a new Teen Days record that's 90% done, and that's presumably going to come out later this year.
Exciting.
Yeah, and then there's this new stuff that I was just talking about that I'm really excited about the stuff on the album. I'm excited about as well. That's going to come out later this year, but that the music was made something like, 2019 probably is when I kind of started and finished most of those songs. And then, like I said earlier, for me, when I'm working on a record, there's a very long editing process. There's things like I've been working with a mixing engineer in Los Angeles who I'm sending the tracks to, and then we're sort of doing this back and forth with different notes, and the whole process just takes a lot longer. I'm usually, this sounds kind of wild, but yeah, I am usually at least an album or two ahead of sort of the release schedule. So right now I'm working on a full length that will come out after the one that comes out later this year. And by the time that one comes out, I will already have another one on my hard drive or something like that.
Perfect. Wow. You're really, really ahead of the game.
Yeah. This recording has always just been this like home base for me. I feel very at home and at peace doing this type of work. So I really do find myself drawn to it.
Did you always record from home?
Yeah, for the most part. I made one record in 2015, or it came out in 2015, but I made it in 2014. And I went to a studio in San Francisco called Tiny Telephone, which was a really, really fun experience. What was wild about that experience is that I made the whole record at home as demos, full arrangements, and then learned the songs on guitar, and sort of I had my friend come play drums on the record. We like rehearsed the entire album and then just left it all at home, went to the studio and essentially kind of recreated it from memory. So there are two versions of that album, the proper one that, you know, was made at the studio, and then this home recording one that's at home, that's just sitting on a hard drive somewhere.
Oh, that's so interesting. Wow.
Yeah. I do really love being in the studio. It's like a really fun experience for me, but I can make quite a lot of music in a short amount of time, and it really is nice to just kind of go to the other room. With like working from home becoming such a thing for all of us now, I definitely feel like I was fully in work from home mode already.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect then. That's not too bad of a transition.
Yeah.
Next question I have for you. If someone wanted to make music that sounded similar to yours, and you know, you have quite a broad variety of sound, but let's just say something like Breathing Tides, what is a few pieces of essential gear they would need?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not very precious about gear, because I feel like when I started, I was just so enamored by this like recording software that I would just do whatever I could in order to try and make sounds and make songs. And so along the way, I sort of would pick up a thing here or there, but have never been the sort of person that's like a completist with gear. But which is to say that like, if you wanted to make music like that, there's, you know, get yourself a good piece of music software like Ableton. There's a ton of things that come with the software that allow you to produce music. But I mean, obviously as a musician and as kind of like a synth nerd, at the end of the day, I'm like totally fascinated by this stuff. I think I'm going to say there's two synths. One is called the Korg M1. It's a total beast. It's from the 80s. I bought mine at a pawn shop for $300. I'm sure that you could find one for roughly the same price or maybe a little bit more expensive, but it sounds like the 80s. There's the presets that it and sounds that exist within this thing just sound incredible. obviously, if that's what you're looking for. And then the other thing I would say to invest in is a good MIDI keyboard. Because like I said, yeah, I spent so long working, the phrase is like in the box. So you're not necessarily using a lot of outboard like synths or technically like real instruments. You're just using the sounds that exist within the computer. Mm-hmm. And I've made a lot of music for a long time, kind of just focused, on that. And having a good MIDI keyboard will allow you to put some human feel into those very sort of digital, quote unquote stock sounds that exist within the software.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. But again, there's like, it's funny. Like I said, I try not to be too precious about it, but when you're in the world of synths and electronic music, you can't help but be just fascinated by this stuff and nerd out over it. I just bought a Juno 106, which is a really great entry point synthesizer, which you can learn a lot about synthesis through it, and have just been having so much fun like messing around with it and doing a lot of experimenting and recording and stuff like that. But it's on the sort of synth market, they're getting incredibly expensive, like way too expensive. And so it could be tough to recommend stuff because it always comes down to the type of project that you want to make. And mm-hmm. like you sort of, the way you framed the question is good because yeah, that, you know, the type of music that I was making on this new EP that's coming out, Breathing Tides, is very ambient. It's a lot of synth sounds, but they're, you know, very subdued and mellow and drone-y, almost that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that stuff can be done just with your computer software.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, this is good to know even for myself, because this year one of my goals is to kind of learn how to DJ/make like electronic music.
Cool.
I have the program FL Studios.
Oh, nice.
I'm just saving up for a new laptop because my Mac crashed. So I'm using a ThinkPad right now, which definitely I don't really think can handle that. But I'm thinking about a MIDI keyboard now because I don't want to stay too much in the box. But
yep.
You know, in the meantime, I'm going to educate myself on the program. And
totally. There's the one that I've been using is it's called the Arturia Keystep. Super compact. Has functionality that can go outside of your computer. You can, you know, if you start finding yourself getting into modular gear, it works really well with that sort of stuff. There's maybe I'm sort of getting into the like nerdy weeds here, but you know, there's a great arpeggiator and sequencer on it. And they're also relatively affordable. So that would be the Arturia Keystep would be my recommendation. But perfect. Again, there's such a wide range. You can get full 88 key, you know, almost like a full piano versions of MIDI keyboards.
Right.
Yeah.
Perhaps in the future.
All in due time.
Yes. Just a couple more questions here. I was just wondering if you had a favorite body of work of yours.
That's a good question. Let's see. Let's pull up my Bandcamp here. It's so wild to think about because it's been 10 years of releasing music and
it's a long time.
It's a long time and there's a lot of music there. You know, you brought up Glacier earlier. That I feel like that's, I also don't revisit my music very often, so I'm almost trying to remember like what songs were on these or
right. Makes sense.
It's a little bit like I don't know, maybe this is kind of corny, but they're like these little memory boxes or like time capsules. Like mm-hmm. when I look at the album art for Glacier, I just think about, or even see like on Spotify, it says like 2013. And I think like, man, 2013, I can remember like the house I was living in. I got married in 2013. I did this big full band tour for the first time. I can think about all of this other stuff and that was happening in my life. And, Yeah, I feel like that's a record that I could put on and probably enjoy. You know what? For the most part, I think I could do that with any. I could put on any of my records and enjoy them. But I will say this, and you know, maybe this is something that would spark interest for anyone else that's an artist out there that's listening. Or when I listened to the first thing that I put out in 2010, I can hear how much I've learned over the last 10 years about production, about songwriting. And it doesn't change the way that I feel. I think that music is like such a perfect encapsulation of where I was. Like that one over, you know, other records that I've released. I was in my last year of college. I had zero responsibilities in my life. I was just hanging out with friends, like not putting the effort into school that I should have been, and just recording all the time. So when I hear it, I don't get hung up on sort of, you know, the thing. I don't get hung up on the production quality necessarily. I hear it as though like, oh, I would have totally done this different, or I would have, you know, I would have used this different sound or whatever. I only just think about memories of like hanging out with friends and, you know, this record especially has got all these inside jokes with my friends in them. And so actually maybe that one, I don't know. It's just so crazy to think that that's 10 years old now, but it would be fun to put on that record. Is called Four More Years, by the way. It would be fun to put that one on and maybe sort of like relive those college days a little bit.
Cool. That's a really great way to look at that, you know, as opposed to nitpicking at the things you weren't so good at. Just remembering the memories. And I think that's awesome.
I try, because it is what it is, right? Like if I really wanted to, I could go back in and like, I think I have those recording sessions somewhere. I could go in and tinker with things. And I remember Kanye did that with Pablo a couple of years ago, like changing the track list and like updating songs, stuff like that. But I don't know. I just like, it's this snapshot. It's like, it's, you know, production mishaps and all. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I guess to end off here, do you have any music recommendations?
Oh, well, so I became a father in September of 2019, and it feels like even in the months leading up to that, I was just like slowly making my way more and more into like dad jazz world. I went nice. From listening to like, I don't even know if I could call it like relatively cool music necessarily, but you know, maybe something somewhat contemporary or kind of hip, I don't know, into just fully like 80s smooth jazz, the corniest, most like sincere saxophone songs that you've
Careless
ever heard.
Careless Whisper?
Imagine Careless Whisper, but like on like a California coast. The album art has got like a guy like driving on the PCH, and there's no singing, everything's instrumental. So if any of this is sort of like, you know, sounding interesting, sparking anything for anyone listening, there's a couple sort of like classic standards. There's a guy, George Benson. There's a like vocal jazz artist who sort of started in the 70s, but his music in the 80s is like really kind of classic 80s sounding. His name's Michael Franks. I really have been listening to a lot of him. There's an entire genre of Japanese music kind of around this time that dips in and out of kind of disco sounds and then more like smooth jazz sounds. The genre kind of gets bundled under this phrase, city pop. And yeah, there's an artist, Tatsuro Yamashita, who like, again, really diverse set of releases. Some of them are like very upbeat and super fun. Some of them are way more mellow, but always like really, he's got an incredible voice. Yeah, I would definitely recommend his stuff. Yeah, and then I think outside of like dad jazz world, I've been listening to Yellow Magic Orchestra a ton over the last 6 months to a year. I mean, they've kind of been my like, and before, but there's something about this year of being inside. I've just been like really, really digging into their discography. For anyone that's unfamiliar, they're like a really influential, important Japanese electronic group from the late 70s, releasing records kind of through the 80s and even the early 90s. But anyways,
cool.
they've got a really deep discography, and they're also all like really, really talented producers and players. So their kind of network of albums they've worked on is really extensive. So I find myself just going to the Yellow Magic Orchestra Discogs page and like going down rabbit holes, just clicking links and seeing like, oh, you know, Hosano, the bass player from the band, played bass or produced on this record, and then like trying to go down these YouTube wormholes of trying to find out like what these albums sounded like. I find myself drawn to these sort of like almost like scavenger hunt artists, where it's maybe like the contemporary version of like crate digging or going to the record store and looking for just the weirdest things, dollar bin records that you can find. For me, it's going on Discogs and YouTube and just like trying to find something that, sparks my interest. And that also, it's always fun to find something that you're like, I don't feel like anyone has listened to this. So YMO for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed my this pleasure. Conversation.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You name it. Any streaming platform, Bandcamp, all the socials. It's usually Teen Daze, DAZE. Yeah.
Great. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. Be sure to check out his new EP, Breathing Tides, and hopefully we'll have you back on the show again sometime soon, perhaps
after that album
drops.
Yeah.